It's the Get Off My Lawn podcast for the week of November 27th, 2022. On tonight's program, you'll hear author, pastor, and civil rights activist Reverend Rob Lee say,
"You would have thought I went and punched Robbie Coltrane and J.K. Rowling straight in the face, and that's just not me."
I'm your announcer, Craig, and now here's your genial host, Kevin.
All right, thank you, Craig, and welcome back into the program. It is the last weekend of November, and shock of shocks, you didn't have to wait 5 years between episodes. We did one episode last week. Here we have another episode this week. Back with me to banter is Craig. How are we doing, Craig?
Doing well. We have a long ways to go to fix our average, though.
Shh, don't bring that.
Well, we're doing it.
We are. We're going to see. I work full-time now. Well, I worked full-time before, but it was a job I didn't care about, and it required no thought. So I was able to devote more time to doing the podcast. Now, for those who don't know me personally, I am a middle school teacher. Yeah, I'm that guy. I have become that guy again. And that takes a lot. It's the same amount of hours as I was working before, but when you're working in just a regular blue-collar job, you don't think during the day. You just don't. My job consists of pushing buttons and watching material spin by me at a rapid speed. And honestly, I don't know if my former boss is listening, but I didn't care about the job.
Yes. That happens.
Yeah. Yeah. There was no incentive to care about the job. It didn't really pay well. And the safety issues were such that since I left, two people had to be hospitalized and one had to be institutionalized. Other than that, things were going great there.
Yeah.
But, and I don't mean to laugh over others' misfortune. They shouldn't have been injured, and it's frustrating that they were, because I and others had been telling them, you know, do better, and the company wasn't. So anyway, I'm not there anymore. I'm at a job where I actually have to devote time and attention and thought. And so as a result, when I get home, it's a little exhausting to try to plan and record a podcast and do things. And in fact, I've actually done this set of interviews in the morning in my classroom before school. So I've done interviews at like 6 a.m.
Wow, that's awfully nice of your guests to do that.
Yeah, but... and I've asked them. I'll do it in the evenings, I'll do it on the weekends, I'll do it whenever, and they seem to prefer the mornings. So that's when I did it. And so, yeah, I set up my little recording studio at literally my teacher's desk, and that's where I did the recording, including the one you're going to hear today. So today we are going to hear from the Right Reverend Rob Lee. If the name sounds familiar, it is because he is a descendant of General Lee. And if that name sounds familiar, yes, that was the name of the Dukes of Hazzard car. I tried to squeeze in a joke about that. It didn't fly at all. I tried. I mean, he had a great sense of humor, and it's actually a really fun interview to listen to him. But no, I tried to kind of bait him with that. Nothing. Didn't get anything back on that. But
did it make the cut in your
I think it made the cut, only because I tend to own, you know, I don't mind when I sound like an idiot on my show. I really only try to edit out if for some reason somebody else sounds bad. That's the genial nature of me. So if I'm an idiot, okay. You know, you might remember you were there for the Craig Shoemaker episode.
Oh, yes.
And at the very tail end of it, I gave the exact, you know, he is the love master, and he's been the love master since the 80s. I mean, that's been his nickname for 30, 40 years. And I called him the love doctor. And the love doctor was an old Dr. Demento sketch, and it was like a forgettable Dr. Demento sketch. But my brain farted, and I left it in because that's the way it goes. He looks at me like the idiot that I was, and, you know, I'll let that slide because that's just me. I don't pretend to be good at this.
That was a great podcast and a very funny evening afterwards.
He was a good guy. For those that didn't catch that episode, I do recommend listening to that one. As opposed to, by the way, have you looked at the SoundCloud numbers at all, or have you ignored them completely? As you rightly said,
no, I have not. I have not looked at them.
The most listened to episode is still the Jonathan Katz episode, the Dr. Katz episode. And that's the one where I struggled to keep up with an improvisational comic who was desperate to improvise with me, and I had no comedic chops for it. It was painful for me to listen to. I for some reason, people seem to like that one.
Well, sometimes you watch a car crash.
Yeah. I wish I had an explanation. I've done whatever it is, 30, 40, 50 of these now, and that one is still the one that tops the chart every time I look at the analytics. And I guess maybe he's just got a lot of fans. I don't know. But, yeah, it just – I couldn't listen to it again. I listened to it when I did it. I listened to it when I edited it together, and I'm done with that one. But apparently people like that one, so – there you go.
I'm going to have to go back and listen to that one again.
Oh, gee, thanks. You're a pal. So for those who do not know who Reverend Rob Lee is, he is a pastor. He is, I guess it's safe to say he's a civil rights activist. He's also an author. He has a couple of books coming out, including one on Star Trek and religion, which is an interesting conversation that he and I had about that. Because if you follow Star Trek at all, Gene Roddenberry really sort of pushed faith and beliefs to the side. He kind of ignored it. And Reverend Lee had some different takes on why and how to still view the episodes. He's a Next Generation fan, which as was I. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, and we will talk a little bit about why he's all he really does on social media is talk about loving one another and being kind to one another. So naturally, he gets vilified on social media. They absolutely attack him. One of the best, I can't call it a bromance because it's with a woman, but Martin Luther King Jr.'s either daughter or granddaughter is like best friends with him on social media. And they bounce jokes back and forth and are just very sweet and funny with each other, considering, you know, he's a descendant of a Civil War general, and she's a descendant of Martin Luther King Jr. It's an interesting friendship that they have. You'll blossom, and it basically blossomed, as near as I can tell, from the two of them getting attacked on social media relentlessly.
What sense does that make? But that's a wonderful testament to what people can do when they let their guard down a little bit and get to know one another.
Yeah. So we're going to talk to him about sort of, again, why he's disliked and how he's risen above it. And again, we'll talk about it. It's a fun interview. If you think it's going to be very serious and preachy because he's a pastor, it's not. It's a fun interview. He's got a lot of interesting and funny things to say. So let us check that out now. Well, let's get started here because Zoom is money, as they say.
Yep, very good.
I am joined today by an ordained minister who is seen as a controversial figure, and I, for the life of me, I don't understand why, as all I seem to see him talk about is things like loving one another and living in peace and harmony. So let's find out why he is so controversial. Reverend Rob Lee, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. Gosh, it's great.
Yeah. Why does social media react to you the way that they do?
You know, I honestly wish I knew. If I did, I might be a better person because of it. Better off mentally, physically, spiritually, all that stuff. I don't know, but I do think, you know, one of the things that comes to mind is that when you're forced to reckon with yourself, like I have been in my past, and then you ask others to reckon with themselves, there's a sense of, you know, I don't want to do this. People don't want to reckon with themselves. People don't want to reckon with the things that we're called to do. And yet I seem to be a lightning rod for that, but I'm okay with that. I've gotten to peace with that. Eventually, after a long time, I finally, you know, there was a spout just recently with J.K. Rowling and all her fans, which is like, I love her books, but I can't get on co-sign with what she believes. And I just expressed that, you know, gosh, I was sorry to hear that Robbie Coltrane died, even though I'm still struggling with the legacy
right.
of J.K. Rowling.
Right.
You would have thought I went and punched Robbie Coltrane and J.K. Rowling straight in the face. And that's just not me. I just was struggling with it, and I was being honest about it online, which may be part of it too, is this honesty that I try to – this vulnerability that I try to espouse. I don't think people like it. I'm still trying to figure it out though.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned your history. You mentioned your past. You know, for those that didn't quite catch his name, you know, Rob Lee is named after not the car from the Dukes of Hazzard, but the actual General Lee from the Civil War era. So you've had an issue having to, first of all, prove that, where
right.
people constantly questioned you on that, at which point, you know,
right.
I'm hoping that matter is settled, though I'm guessing
right.
you still get people on social media that say otherwise. But
man, social media is the worst.
And if any, well, that's where I found you. Obviously, that was sort of one of the when I first approached you, wanting to talk to you. I said, you know, it was sort of seeing you on social media and seeing the reactions that people had to you. First, I want to talk about the positive reactions too. You know, specifically you and Bernice King. Every time I see a picture of the two of you together, it warms my heart, and I do want to talk about that. But obviously, the part that tends to be the focus, so I'm going to shamelessly focus on it too, is sort of the fact that, like I said, people challenge you because of your past, because of your name, because of your rejection of that history, you know, and your condemnation of that history. Where does that put you? What do you face on a day-to-day? Most of us go on social media, and yeah, occasionally we get the people who are the haters who just, you know, you say, I like toast, and people are going to hate you just for saying I like toast. But you go beyond that, and you have to face that on a daily basis. What's that like?
I mean, I feel like the Twitter people that monitor all the stuff that could go wrong are my friends by now. I've had people publish my address. I've had people publish things that about me that are very personal, children's names, stuff like that, things that I don't broadcast online. Some of the few things I don't broadcast online are broadcast online.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just not fair. My children didn't ask for this. They didn't, you know, and so they were kind of off limits to me. But when people start to engage them, that's when I really turn into mama bear and just freak out. I've had a death threat lodged against me. I've had people shoot at my house. I mean, all these things, though, I'll be honest with you, I'm always hesitant to talk about them because they pale in comparison to what people like Bernice King, my friend that you just mentioned, and countless other people of color in this country face every single day of their lives.
Sure, that's a good point.
You know, so I want to be clear there. Certainly my life has been made harder by my stance and by what has happened. All that's happened, my story is easily readable online. But all that's to say is for me to sit with that for forever would be a disingenuous to the movement that I'm trying to support, which is ultimately the fruition of Black life in this country, the same that I experienced growing up as a white male. I think that people are entitled to that in this country. I think that it's something that should be a right, not a privilege. So that has become apparently a controversial subject, which to me it shouldn't be.
Right.
And I think Kevin, that's why so many of us are struggling right now on social media, is because to some of us these are non-issues, right? Like these are not issues that we should be discussing, and yet we're having to go back almost like we're being held back a grade to address these issues with people who don't want to hear them. And any teacher will know that if a student doesn't want to hear it, they aren't going to hear it. They're going to find ways not to hear it, right?
Like I can't relate to that at all.
Can't relate to that at all, right? I figured not, but you know, seriously though, what does give me hope in all of this are people like Bernice King who have come alongside me, who wrote the foreword for one of my books, A Sin by Any Other Name, Reckoning with Racism and the Heritage of the South, but also those people who are the unsung heroes, the people who go to work every day and encourage each other to be better, to do better. You know, Bernice is a flagship. She's the head of a movement, and that's great. But there's also countless sung and unsung heroes along the way who have made this country a better place. And those are the people that I like to focus on too.
Tell me about how you got involved in social justice. Did it come from your religious background? Did it evolve separately from that? Tell me about how that sort of happened.
I think it certainly came from my religious background. I was convinced at a young age by a woman of color who was my confirmation mentor to change my perspective on the Confederate flag and the poster of Robert E. Lee I had in my bedroom. I talk about this at length in my book, but all that's to say is I cannot detach my quest for social justice from my religious upbringing, nor would I want to. I am deeply convinced as a Christian that the way to live right with God is to seek justice for others. And to seek justice for others means that I am seeking, equality and tranquility and all those great things for myself, and love and compassion, all the things that we Christians are supposed to be talking about. When we get off track is what we see in some of these evangelical Christians who are far more concerned with who's in and who's out. That stuff doesn't bother me too much. What bothers me is the sight of suffering. What bothers me is the sight of inequality. And the smell of injustice, and we've got to address those things before we start talking about the ins and outs of salvation for all of humankind.
To coin a phrase, amen to that, sir.
There you go. Yeah.
You have on your Zoom background, which no one but me can see, a picture of Star Trek's bridge.
There it is. It is the mighty Enterprise D. You have a book coming out talking, well, essentially, if I understand it right, it is a book on devotions based on Star Trek The Next Generation. Tell me about that.
Well, it was a project. It's a passion project that I've wanted to do for some time, but, you know, sometimes with writing and with manuscripts, you have to lay one aside for another. So that's what I've been doing. I finally picked this one back up and have been working in earnest on it. We're expecting it to be done in March of 2023. But all that's to say is it's an episodic devotional. So I take each episode and I've watched each episode again and again and again, which is fun for me. It's great fun for me, trying to find some kernel of truth or compassion or kindness or expression of faith that I find in each episode. And then I compare it. So you get a synopsis of the episode. You get a little Next Generation trivia, which is talking about how all this stuff is playing out in the 1980s and 90s for Next Generation. And then you get the devotional, which focuses on the faith aspect of it. Because, you know, to be honest with you, I learned more in my early years about – I went to church every Sunday, but I still learned more about faith from watching Star Trek than I did in other places.
Okay, I got to probe you on that one, only because how I as a Christian have always struggled with Star Trek is that there seems to be a distinct absence of faith. If not, I mean, there's belief, but there doesn't seem to be a faith system in anybody in Gene Roddenberry's future.
Well, and you're right. And Gene Roddenberry was an avowed humanist. He was not someone who saw faith with merit. But I actually did my senior thesis on this too at Appalachian State. Is I actually think that in his an attempt to relegate religion to a thing of the past, he actually brought it to the forefront. You can't watch what's a good episode, The Measure of Man, which is an episode where Data is. They try to determine if the android Data is a human sentient being. You can't watch that and not see a quest for a better world, a quest for a better, you know, all the things that religion espouses, but it may not have the title of religion on it. But for me, it was one of those episodes that was deeply religious. You watch The Inner Light, you watch, I mean, there's so many episodes that I've watched and I'm just like, what? This is perfectly summing up faith in every aspect. And in fact, I thought I would have trouble finding faith in some episodes, but even still, I have not had. I'm up to, you know, almost 100 episodes I've done. I've got 172 left, or 172 total. I'm up to 100 episodes, so I've got to get a few more done. But all that's to say is that each episode has proved to be more faithful than I could have ever imagined. And I'm not talking about the, like, let's get saved and find Jesus. I'm talking about the things that religion at its best can offer us.
Okay, that's a fair argument. It's almost like you've written a thesis on it.
I've been working on this for a while, yeah, in fairness. So, yeah.
How has the South and the history of it, how does that legacy in our country, how do we... It just sounds silly to ask it, but how do we change it? What are we doing? You know, you speak out constantly about, you know, your family's past and about the wrongness of it, and you've championed and gotten, you know, Confederate statues removed because, again, that's not what we are supposed to represent in this nation. Is that the start of it? Is that the middle of it? Where are we in the process?
Well, to answer your question in two segments, the first thing I will say is that the legacy of the South is not something that we should ever erase, neglect, or forget. We can't just get rid of it, unfortunately. But we can be honest about it, which is something that I am working really hard on, is I'd rather us be honest about the past than to forget it. And to be honest about the past requires us to acknowledge that things like statues in our city square have no place in our country. They just don't. They don't. We don't have statues to the fascists. We don't have statues to the losers. And I hate to say it like that, but these men, including my ancestor, fought against the Boys in Blue. They fought against the United States military. And yet we still have statues to them in city squares across the South. And even as far north, northwest as Oregon, there are statues to Robert E. Lee and to names on schools and stuff. It just confuses the bejesus out of me, honestly. All that's to say, though, where we are in this conversation is still very, very new. We're not as far as I'd like to be, but we're farther than I thought we'd be, if that makes sense. Sure. I never thought I'd see the statues come down in my lifetime, yet here we are.
Sure.
But now we have to acknowledge that there are statues, there are memorials to the Confederacy still in places like our schools, still in places like the school to prison pipeline, still in places like our healthcare system where people can't get the care they need simply because of the color of their skin. There may be statues that have come down like in Richmond that I'm very proud of, but that doesn't mean that the sentiments behind them have been relegated to the past where they ultimately need to be. So what we have to do as a society is not to pat ourselves on the back, but to see what's next and what's possible. Because had you told me 5 years ago that the statue on Monument Avenue in Richmond would be gone today, I would have laughed. But look at what people who worked hard did and accomplished in a very short amount of time.
That is all true. What if you were to have a full access to the nation today, what would your call to action be? What would be the thing that you would want them to obviously, of course, buy your books?
I'm not going to recommend that to the nation.
Exactly. But what
I'm not gonna wish that on them.
Yeah. What would your call to action be right now?
I think my call to action would be two words: love wastefully. And what I mean by that is love without regard to the cost. And I don't mean this superfluous love that's like up in the ether. I mean down on the ground, like love that requires action, love that requires you to be better and to act better and to be kinder and to expect kindness from others. I mean, as we're recording this, I was just reading that Paul Pelosi, the Speaker of the House's husband, was violently assaulted this morning.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
And then is in the hospital. I just read this come across the AP wire before I got on this interview with you, not to date the episode or whatever. All that's to say, though, is we've got to be better. This has got to stop. This madness has got to stop. And the only way I see forward is a high dose of love that can overcome that hate. And I'm not trying to talk again. Please don't hear me as saying this is a highbrow issue that we can only solve with love. Love requires something of us. And if we can do that together, I think we'll be far better off than if we do it apart.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to chat with me here today. Anything, like I said, I know you've got a new book to promote, but do you have a podcast? Do you have a regular stream of your worship services? What can you promote for yourself here?
Yeah, you can visit robleefour.com, the number 4.com. That's got all my information. It's got previous sermons and prayers along with all my books. I just released a book, Fostering Hope, a prayer book for foster and adoptive families. My wife and I were lucky enough to adopt two amazing girls.
Very nice. Congratulations.
So that just came out actually a few weeks back. And so that's that one. And then obviously the Star Trek one's up next. So we try to keep people in the loop on the website and on my Twitter, which is @robleefour.
Well, I look forward to seeing and reading it when it comes out. So thank you again for your time, and take care of yourself.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
Yeah.
Maybe it's streaming, or maybe it's playing at a theater near you. Either way, Tim Brennan is talking about movies with Kevin. So kindly listen up.
All right, you ready?
Yeah, let's do this.
All right, we are joined once again by our resident film critic. You need like an adjective. Everybody else has an adjective. I'm genial. What would your adjective be to Mr. Tim Brennan, our film critic?
Well, are we doing like the Marvel Comics thing where it was like Jolly Jack Kirby and Smilin' Stanton? Are we going
to
do that?
We don't have to have alliteration, but it's your choice. You pick an adjective and that will, from henceforward, be your adjective.
Well, you know what? I'm not super strong in adjectives right this second, so I'm going to defer to your adjective experience.
Well, at this point, you are simply our resident film critic, but that could change at any moment's notice. Maybe, maybe as we're going through this process today, we will find a new adjective in the process that will work. We'll test them out.
I'm good with that. Yep, I'm very comfortable with that.
Excellent. So you have dogs and a cat in the background. I have cats in the background and possibly another helicopter overhead. We will find out. So I gave you a homework assignment last time.
You did.
Did you do your homework, young man?
I absolutely did. We discussed watching something for the approaching holiday season.
Yes.
And you asked me to give a watch to Spirited, the new musical comedy on Apple TV. And I finished watching it about 2 hours ago. So it's still very fresh in my head.
Very fresh in your head. All right. Well, hit us with your review. And then we can Siskel and Ebert this bitch. We can actually go back and forth and debate it.
Definitely. So very quickly, for those who aren't familiar with this film, Will Ferrell plays the ghost of Christmas Present. And he has been doing what he has been doing for many, many Christmas seasons. And he very much enjoys showing horrible garbage people the errors of their ways. And then he finds the ultimate, ultimate trash fire of a human being that he thinks can be redeemed. And that person is played by Ryan Reynolds, playing a publicist. Do we think that's correct?
I would say so, yeah.
Yeah, a publicist spreading like misinformation and horror and just nightmares throughout the world. So it's a spin on A Christmas Carol, because we clearly don't have enough of those.
Nope. They do make enough references to like that fact, you know, and there's enough jokes about it throughout it that it's sort of very self-effacing in that regard, at least.
And you know, one quick thing about that, there's a moment in the film where it references Scrooged, and it's not good when a film references a better film, because as soon as they mention Scrooged, I thought for just a moment, God, I really wish I was watching Scrooged instead.
You're not wrong.
But I digress. Yeah.
Well, I give credit where credit... I have an echo. I'm not supposed to have an echo. Apparently I have an echo.
That's all right. This is
the quality program we got going on here today. All right,
we're doing this in a cave.
Yeah, credit where credit's due. It's Octavia was Octavia Spencer was the sort of sidekick to Ryan Reynolds' character, wasn't she?
She was. She was one of his underlings. And you know, I guess just a couple of thoughts about it. I kind of think she was the MVP of this film. It's a musical comedy. I mean, it is in all caps, musical.
Yes.
With all good and bad that is accompanied with that concept. And of the three main leads, she is the one who not only can sing, but can sing well.
Yeah.
Like, she's got her own musical number, and then she chimes in on a couple of them. And when she was doing that, she was hitting it. She was great. I mean, Octavia Spencer is just amazing. Yeah. She, you know, she's got a good flair for comedy. She can handle drama. Okay, you know what? Before I start rambling, do you want positives or negatives out of me first?
It's your time, Tim. It is your time.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Well, there's a long, proud tradition of musicals being too long. And this one is no different. Right now, as I look on IMDb, it is telling me that it's 2 hours and 7 minutes long. And a musical comedy should not be under any circumstances 2 hours and 7 minutes long. And let me tell you, it felt profoundly like it was 2 hours and 7 minutes long.
It might have felt like it was 2 hours and 8 minutes long, but I would never dare correct you.
let's not get crazy. You might be right. But like it dragged. And I think you could cut a good at least 20 minutes without seriously harming it.
Yeah.
The other thing is, you know, if you're going to do a riff on A Christmas Carol, there has to be a big degree of sincerity, because the story you're essentially telling is about a person who has descended into selfishness, who is learning to be selfish. To be selfless. And I like Ryan Reynolds as a performer. I like him better when he's maybe not kind of leaning on his Deadpool shtick all the time. People like the Deadpool shtick. The Deadpool shtick has no sincerity. So like anytime there is real emotion, it just bounces off of him like this kind of force field. It just whoosh and just goes away. And Will Ferrell can be okay with the sincerity as well, but he's a comedian, and so he wants to go for the laugh. And so there's a bunch of moments. It's kind of like watching a Marvel movie where there's supposed to be real sincerity, real emotion, and then it immediately gets undercut with a joke. And then the joke goes on, and then it goes on some more. And then it goes on some more, and I'm thinking to myself, can we move on to another joke?
Yes. Yeah. My take on it was that the cast made the movie better than the movie deserved to be. There were you know, three principal people in it who upstaged the script, because the script wasn't complete, in my opinion. And the other thing that I thought would have made the script complete was that the script didn't decide what it wanted to be. It didn't decide if it wanted to be a send-up of a holiday movie or if it wanted to be a holiday movie. And I think had they made the decision and committed to it, either of those two choices would have worked. But there were times that it was sort of parodying itself and then parodying other, you know, and that was where it wasn't a bad film. You know, it wasn't a waste of my 2 hours and 7 minutes to use your timing.
No.
But it could have been something that would, you know, you look at, like, you know, again, they referenced Scrooged, you know, and Will Ferrell, of course, also did Elf. So you look at two Christmas movies there that people will rewatch year after year after year. I don't know that Spirited is going to be that for Apple Plus.
And it wants to be that, because the movie is like a big dumb Labrador where it wants you to like it so badly.
Yeah.
And it's jumping up on you and it's licking your face and its tail is knocking over glasses and occasionally it steps in your groin. But it's trying so hard.
Yeah. It's a likable film.
So I can't. It is a likable film, and I can't say that I disliked it, because it's pushing so hard, and when it does work, it works pretty well. But like you say, it doesn't really know what it wants to be, so it's kind of Frankensteined into this weird shape, and then that shape goes too long.
Yeah, and in terms of the length, you know, we who were brought up in the generation of movies that were produced knowing that television existed became accustomed to that 1 hour and 20 minute, 1 hour and 30 minute long movie. You know, movies used to be a lot longer back in the day, you know, when Dinosaurs Roamed the Earth and Casablanca was a movie, you know, things could go 2 hours and it wasn't an issue with people. But now when you're sitting down for 2 hours for, you know, whatever it is, you're committed to that. And I don't know that this movie deserved a 2 hour commitment. I think this movie deserved a 1.5 hour commitment just fine, or, you know, around that time frame. And that's where it sort of really, like you said, there was a pull where it felt like it was pulling on my time.
Yeah, agreed. And I mean, there are movies out there, like, I don't know if you saw from last, I think, March of this year, The Batman. That thing is 3 hours long. And there were very few moments in that where I thought, like, oh, we gotta get moving, guys. For the most part, that movie used its cinematic real estate really well.
Yeah.
And this movie wasn't that. Yeah. And I think, again, to go back to what you were saying, I think you have a problem where it doesn't know if it wants to be a parody of a holiday movie or if it wants to be a holiday movie. And then it's really reluctant to kind of be as efficient a film as possible.
Yeah.
And when you have those two big problems, it's not that it's fatal, it's just it ain't good.
Yeah. And just to draw a comparison again between Batman, let's compare Batman to Christmas movies. Batman knew what it wanted to be. And it was, I mean, it had its own flaws. Number one is that they needed, you know, to actually light the set. But when you watch Batman from start to finish knew what the movie wanted to be, and it set out to do that. And like I said, that's where this movie, it's still, you know, if you need something to watch over the holidays, this one is an option. I gave you the choice originally of the two movies, either that one or the sequel to A Christmas Story. I did watch that one as well. I can tell you that one, just my quick 30-second review of A Christmas Story. Christmas is the official title of it. It's slow to start, but it gets there. And it has pretty much all of the kids who are in the original movie play themselves as adults. So if you want to see, you know, that, and the original house is there, and, you know, all the stuff that brings you back to the original movie are there. But it is slow to start, but it does work. You have to buy into it and just commit to it, and then it works.
I recall the original, and I haven't seen it in years, but I recall the original was pretty charming.
Yeah.
Did this film hold up to that charm to a degree?
Yes, it did. And what I was worried about was that, you know, we live in an era, and looking at Spirited as an example, where there's a lot of cynicism that is now applied to the modern day movie, whatever it happens to be. You know, something that sticks with me when Conan O'Brien was fired from The Tonight Show was at the very, very end of it, he said he wished that people would just not be cynical. That was his parting wish when he got canned from The Tonight Show. And cynicism has its time and place, but in a Christmas movie, it doesn't need to be there. And Spirited had more than its fair share of cynicism. A Christmas Story kept it, it wasn't by any stretch of the imagination real, but it kept it grounded in that sort of humbleness and you know, silly Christmas nostalgia that the original movie had.
Oh, that's very nice.
So, and the other nice thing is, the other nice thing is it's set in the 70s, so while... like it's now featuring the children of the original children. So there's things that you and I could point to in terms of like how the sets were, you know, and he references his his orange and yellow kitchen with the green telephone mounted on the wall, you know, things like that at the very beginning of the film. And you're like, had that, you know, so there's some sort of something for us, our generation, to cling on to as we watch the new movie too. So it had that going for it. Of the two, I would recommend A Christmas Story, Christmas over Spirited.
Okay. Then I will have to check Christmas Story Christmas out at some point.
There you go. Well, this concludes our holiday edition. There may be more holiday movies down the road, but this concludes our holiday edition, our post-Thanksgiving edition. I'm currently once again sitting outside the house, not because I'm banished, but because I'm the only person in the household who isn't sick. So I'm trying to... spend some time out doing some yard work and organizing the shed, and you know, it's been one of those sorts of days, so that's where we are. So Tim, thank you for joining us.
All right, thank you so much.
Yeah, we will catch you again on our next outing, which that
sounds
more
ominous. Like a plan.
Sounds more ominous than it is.
I please don't hunt me, I can't run very fast.
Oh, what do you think I can? All right, Tim Brennan, we'll chat with you soon.
All right, thanks you much.
This has been the Get Off My Lawn podcast, brought to you by nobody. And let's not kid each other. Nobody listens to the closing credits, right? Unless we put an Easter egg or two after the credits. Maybe we did. Maybe we didn't. Only one way to find out. Anyway, follow us on Facebook or Twitter at Get Off My Lawn Pod. Check out our SoundCloud at Get Off My Lawn Podcast or subscribe to us on iTunes for the latest episodes. Questions or comments, or to suggest a guest, our email address is getoffmylawnpod@gmail.com. The theme was written and composed by Brian Weideman. Check out his music at www.worldbride.com. That's WORLDBRI.com. The logo was designed by Julie Contreras at Urban Bird Design. Go to urbanbirddesign.com to learn more. Thanks for listening. Tell a friend.
I am going to apologize in advance. We have a guest star too.
A cat butt.
We do. The dogs have squeaky toys.
Excellent.
Yeah. So if it becomes a problem, let me know, and we'll figure something out.
Well, last time I recorded with you, I had a helicopter overhead, so I think we can deal with a squeaky toy or two. So
fabulous. All right, that works.